We're holding on Nun Aleph Omid Beis, two lines from the bottom. We said in the Mishnah that a person has to follow the Minhagim of where they came from and the Minhagim of where they're traveling to. And we discussed in the Gemara yesterday various details about that, including various things about what kind of minhagim we're talking about. There's a difference between minhagim that were established by chachamim in the area versus that the people came up with by themselves, and minhagim that are based that minhagim where they know that something is mutter but they're assering it out of a chumrah versus where they mistakenly think that it's osir, and so on and so forth. So more on that topic. Rab Safra, Rab Abba, Kagoin Anan. Rab Safra asks, what do we do, for example, we know the kvios of when Rosh Chodesh is, meaning therefore, in other words, that we know when Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Hashanah is, and therefore we only have to keep one day of Yom Tov. So what happens when I'm traveling to a place where they keep 2 days? Tosfos says we don't just mean that he knows how to calculate the calendar. As a matter of fact, all Bnei Bavel, not all, but many Bnei Bavel were expert at that kind of thing, at the calculations that you have in the Rambam in Perek Echad these days that describe how exactly to calculate when Rosh Chodesh is, when the moon is going to be visible, and so forth. And still they have to keep 2 days. What it means is, in other words, we know that in Rav Safra's times, the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, the Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, was still Makadosh the Chodesh every month. Then they would send out Shluchim to inform everybody when Rosh Chodesh is. In Mishnayos Rosh Hashanah, it talks about that originally they had signal fires, but then the Kosim messed things up, so they couldn't use those anymore, so then they had to start sending Shluchim. And there's a limit how far the Shluchim can travel before Yom Tov, so any place where they can't reach in time, those places have to keep two days Yom Tov. So the question, therefore, was that I'm in a place. I come from a place where the shluchim reach, so therefore I only have to keep 1 day. What happens if I travel someplace where they keep 2 days? Now, Marsha asks the question, well, what do you mean? I mean, if Rav Safra is able to get to this other place before Yom Tov, so would the Shluchim. So the people in this other place would also know they only have to keep 1 day Yom Tov. What's the question? So Rabbi Akiva Eger brings over here in Gilyon HaShas, and actually Tosfos brings it in Sukkah, where it discusses this point, that what it is the Gemara mentions elsewhere, and in Rosh Hashanah, I think, that you had places where the Shluchim could reach in Nisan, but couldn't reach in Tishrei. Because in Nisan they have a couple extra days to travel. In Nisan they can travel every day from Rosh Chodesh as soon as they hear that Beis Din was Mekadesh L'Chodesh until Pesach. All they have to do is stop for Shabbos. In Tishrei they have to stop for all of Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah itself may sometimes be 2 days, and for Yom Kippur, so they lose out a couple of days. So you can have places where the Shluchim of Nisan can reach, but the Shluchim of Tishrei can't reach them in time for Sukkos. So Rab Safra, let's say, is asking, suppose that I come from a place where both the Shluchim Nisan and Shluchim Tishrei are able to reach in time. Therefore, where I come from, we only have to keep 1 day Yom Tov. But I'm traveling, let's say, I'm traveling for Sukkos, let's say, to a place where the Shluchim, I'm traveling for Pesach, let's say, to a place where the Shluchim Tishrei wouldn't be able to reach in time, but the Shluchei Nisan are, and therefore with such people, so we still say, the Chachamim didn't want to say that they should keep 1 day when it comes to Pesach, but 2 days when it comes to Sukkos, because we don't want them to start getting careless with the second day Yom Tov. So now the question is, but I myself come from a place where we keep only 1 day Yom Tov, so therefore, continuing the Gemara, the Yishuv of Loyav Avidna, so I don't do work on the second day Yom Tov in such a place in the city itself because of Machlokas, because they were Noyag Issu in it, I'm not going to be over on that. And Tosfos says it means even doing malacha in private, because malacha, Tosfos says, is impossible to be done in private. Now, what does that mean, impossible? There are, of course, types of malacha that could be done privately. One possibility is it means that the Chachamim didn't want to make a distinction. Many kinds of malacha are done publicly. Therefore, the Chachamim just make a blanket rule that, and in such a case, any kind of malacha is aser, even in private. Another explanation I think Moshe Feinstein gives is that it means that even let's say you have a private malacha, like let's say writing, not necessarily. So what if somebody walks in on you? You're not going to realize and be able to hide it fast enough. So then it's going to look, so then it's going to be obvious to them that you were doing malacha on Yom Tov, and it's going to cause machlokas. Or not on Yom, for you it's not Yom Tov, but for them it's Yom Tov. So it's going to cause machlokas. On the other hand, there are other Rishonim who learn that maybe what he means is I won't do malacha in public, but yes, I will do malacha betzina. The halacha is like the first opinion, so in such a case, you're not allowed to do malacha b'fahesia or betzina. Anyway, so he's saying, so in the cities then, I don't do malacha because mipnei shinui hamachloikas, because it's doing differently than them, and therefore it can cause machloikas. The question is, b'midbar mai, what about if I'm in the desert? What about if I'm away from the city? In such a case, would I be able to do malacha, since after all, it isn't Yom Tov for me. The whole reason I'm keeping a second day Yom Tov is mipnei machlokas, because the locals have to keep 2 days Yom Tov, and therefore I have to follow their minhag. But does that apply in the midbar as well? So Amalei, so that was Rab Safra's question. So Rab Abba answers, as a matter of fact, Ochi Amar Rab Ami, this is what Rab Ami said, b'yishuv also b'midbar mutter. As a matter of fact, yes, you would be usher to do malacha in the city, like you said, because it's mipnei machlokas. But in fact, because it's not really Yom Tov for you, because after all, you come from a place where both the Shluchei Nissen and the Shluchei Tishrei reach, and therefore you yourself are only obligated to keep 1 day Yom Tov. Therefore, in the Midbar, in such a place, in Bavel, however, you in fact would be mutter to do malacha, because for you it's not Yom Tov. This is, of course, very negea nowadays. You have the whole question about when a person travels from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz or vice versa, what do they do as far as Yom Tov? Do they keep Yom Tov according to where they came from, or do they keep Yom Tov according to where they are now? There are many different opinions about that among the poskim. The Alter Rebbe himself seems to have changed his mind in the relevant section of Hilchos Yom Tov. He says that it depends whether you're talking about that depends whether he's planning to return. It depends whether we're talking about Ben Eretz Yisrael going to Chutz La'aretz or vice versa, based on this Gemara over here. On the other hand, in Ma'adura Basra, we have the Alter Rebbe began rewriting the Shulchan Aruch a lot of times arguing with the Magen Avraham and incorporating more Pesachim al Pi Kabbalah and so forth. In the event, we only have the first four simonim of it. But in Simon Aleph, he writes that in each place in the world, the Hashpa Milamaila is appropriate to that place. And therefore, he says, based on that, he says, you would always just go as far as how many days of Yom Tov you're keeping according to where you are right now. If you're a Ben Eretz Yisrael and you're visiting Chutz La'aretz, you'd be required to keep 2 days, and vice versa. If you're traveling from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, then because now you're in Eretz Yisrael, you'd only be required to keep 1 day. That's actually Alpi Nigla, that's the opinion of the Chacham Tzvi. The Alter Rebbe accepts that in Ma'adur Basra, and therefore that's the general minhag among the Lubavitchers, is that that's what we do. We just, when a person travels from one place to another, they just follow the local number of days of Yom Tov, and that's that. Whereas the Velt would do that. It depends whether you're planning to return, how soon you're planning to return, et cetera, which is why you have the whole thing every so often, for example, that you hear about people from Chutz La'aretz visiting Eretz Yisrael and making themselves a private minion on the second day of Yom Tov in order to daven and say Musaf and Lane and whatever, where in Eretz Yisrael that where the rest of the locals wouldn't be doing that because they're keeping only 1 day. Okay. Onward. Rab Nosson bar Asya Ozomi Bey Rav Lapumadis of Yom Tov Sheni Shogolius. Rab Nosson, speaking of the second day of Yom Tov, Rab Nosson bar Asya one time went from Bey Rav, from the yeshiva, to Pumbedissa. The yeshiva apparently was not in Pumbedissa itself, but outside it, and more than a Tchum Shabbos away, and more than two Tchum Shabbos away, so even an Eruv Tchumen wouldn't help. And he did this B'yomtev Sheni Shal Atzeres, on the second day of Shavuos. Maybe because he took the view that even though in Bavel you have to keep 2 days Yom Tov, maybe he felt that doesn't apply to Shavuos, because by the time Shavuos comes, you know already when Pesach was, because Shavuos is always 50 days after Pesach. Nevertheless, he was wrong for doing that, because the halacha is, just like we said before about the Shluchei Nissen and Tishrei, that once you're required to keep one Yom Tov of 2 days, once you're required to keep Sukkos 2 days in a certain place in Chutz La'aretz, then you become required to keep all the other Yom Tovim there 2 days as well, even Pesach and even Shavuos. So therefore, Shamtei Rabbi Yosef, therefore Rabbi Yosef put this Rabbi Nosson Ba'asya in Cherem. Amalei Abaya V'linga De Mau Negidi. So Abaya asks him, why did you put him in Cherem? Why didn't you instead give him Makas Maudus? It's not an Issur Doraisa, the second day of Shavuos, so you can't give him Malkus Doraisa, but why don't you give him Makas Maudus for being over on a Din Drabanan? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef answers him, Adifa Abdile. What I did for him is the stronger thing, the more chomer thing. Because we have the example that in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, when a Talmid Chacham does something wrong, mimnu and the gida de Bei Barav, they'll be more willing to vote for giving him Malkus v'loy mimnu ashamta. They won't be so quick to vote to give him to put him in Cherem. So in other words, in Eretz Yisrael, they consider Cherem to be more severe than Malkus. So therefore, they're more willing to vote that a person should get Malkus than that a person should get Cherem. So therefore, I'm putting him in Cherem, which is the stronger thing, because it was over on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias, which is a very, very serious thing. Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias is a major takana of the Chachamim. It's in a way much more serious than other things that are done. And therefore, that's what I'm doing. Different explanation, actually. The Rif and the Rosh say that this Mimnu Anegida V'loi Mimnu Ashamta. Hello? Oh, welcome back. This Mimnu Anegida V'loi Mimnu Ashamta, the Rif and the Rosh bring an explanation. What it means is that to give a Talmid Chacham Malkus, they would require a full vote for it. But to put him in Cherem, they wouldn't require that everybody has to go and give a full vote. So we see, in other words, the point, the same idea. In other words, they're considering Cherem to be more chomer, so much so that they don't even require a full vote for it. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef saying, that's what I did for him. Ikka de Amri Nagde Rabbi Yosef. Others say the other way around, that Rabbi Yosef gave this Rabbi Nosson Ba'asya Malkus for being over at Marcus Maudus, that is, for being over on the second day of Yom Tov. Omalei Abaya Nishamte Maris. Abaya asks him then, according to that version, why did you give him Malkus? Why didn't you put him in Cherem? The Rav or Shmuel, the Amit Tavai, Menadin al Shnei Yom Tov Shogolis. After all, Rav and Shmuel both say that you give Nidui for being over on the second day, for being over on the second day of Yom Tov, because it's a very, very serious thing. It's a much more major takana of Chachamim than other ones. Amalei. So according to this version, Rabbi Yosef answers him, Hani Mili Inish Da'alma. That would apply only to a regular person. But over here we are talking about a young Talmid Chacham. Therefore, the Tavalei Abdi. Therefore, I did what's better, what's more lenient for him. And again, for this reason, as we said before, Rava Mimnu Anegad to Debarbei Rav, that we see in Eretz Yisrael, they'll vote to give a Talmid Chacham Malkus, or they'll require a full vote in order to give him Malkus. V'loy Mimnu Ashamta. They won't so easily vote for, or they won't require a full vote for to put him in Cherem. So therefore, in other words, Malkus is a Makas Maudus is a lesser punishment. He being a Talmid Chacham, then I'm giving him that break and giving him only Malkus rather than Cherem, which is, as usual, when you have two Lashonis in the Gemara, the Halacha is like the second one, and here also the Rambam paskins that way, and Shulchan Aruch paskins that way, that yes, that if a person is over on the second day of Yom Tov, then they put him in Cherem, but if he's a Talmid Chacham, then instead they go easy on him and give him Makas Maudus. Well, no, you wouldn't rather be in. That's true. Makas Maudus are terrible, but Cherem is even worse in many ways. So, yeah. Okay. Good idea. Okay. Mishnah says, Kayotze boy. We said in the Mishnah, similarly, when we're talking about what a person has to do, where he comes from and where he goes to, Hamolach Peres Shvius. So we said in the Mishnah that if a person is taking Peres Shvius, from a place where that kind is used up and no longer available in the fields to a place where they haven't, then still, or vice versa, then still chayev levayer, then he has to do beer when the time comes. So to recap, we said in the Mishnah that one mitzvah you have with Peiros Shvius is that one mitzvah you have is that once, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, Gemara on Amud Beis, the source for it in the pasuk, that when that Peiros Shvius, you eventually reach a point where none of that kind of Peiros are available in the fields anymore for the wild animals to eat. At that point, you have to be mevayer. At that point, you have to do beer of whatever you have left of those peiros. We're going to learn on Omid Beis, there's a machloikas rishonim, what exactly beer consists of. But anyway, the point is that you have to do beer. So even though, let's say, so to give one example, we're going to have the Gemara is going to give us on Daf Nun Gimel a few different examples of peiros, and the deadlines for them. For example, the first one on the list over there is grapes until Pesach. Grapes are usually harvested of Elul Tishrei time, but you still have some that remain on the vines. You still have some that remain on the vines for months after that that nobody harvested. Eventually comes Pesach time, and all of those are gone. So at that point, then you have to do beer on any remaining grapes, so any wine that you have left. So now, let's say, for example, now we're going to learn on Omid Beis that there are different regions of Eretz Yisrael for this purpose. You have Yehuda, Galil, Eivor HaYarden. So let's say, for example, you're coming from the Galil. Let's say over there that the latest you're going to find grapes on the vines left for the Chayas to eat is Purim time. So now, suppose you're traveling from the Galil to Yehuda, and you have grapes with you. You have grapes with you, and it comes Purim time. So the Mishnah is telling us you have to do beer of them Purim time, even though in Yehuda you could have waited until Pesach, and vice versa. And then the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda had used an odd expression. We say "Seva hobi lacha af ata." That we say, go bring yourself some. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Seva Havelacha Afata, or Omrim Loit, Seva Havelacha Afata. So what does that mean? It sounds like Nun Beis Amud Aleph, about a third of the way down. So it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is saying that, look, if you're from, for example, a place where there are still grapes on the vines after Purim, you're able to say to the one who comes from an earlier place, go bring yourself from the same place, and you'll find that it's not kola. In other words, it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if a person from the Galil, let's say, goes to Yehuda, and he has grapes with him, so the Tanakhama would be saying he has to do beer after Purim, because at that point there's no grapes on the vines where he comes from, the Galil. It sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is saying that no, he doesn't have to yet, because a person from Yehuda, where he is now, could tell him, look, Mr. Galil, you go out to the grapevines here in Yehuda and you'll still find grapes on them. Therefore, you don't have to do beer. The question is, Valesli, the Rabbi Yehuda, Hoditnan, Noisnil of Chumar Amokam, Shayatza Misham, Vachumar Amokam, Shaholach Lasham. What does Rabbi Yehuda not agree with what we said in the ratio of the Mishnah that what are you going to say? In other words, that Rabbi Yehuda is the fact is, first of all, he's bringing from the Galil, where they're not available anymore. And second of all, anyway, even if we said, you could say, in other words, that the person from the Galil, that's the word, the person from the Galil now is going to be saying, I have to do beer on my grapes. Now, on the face of it, wouldn't that cause machloikas? We said the person should be following the local menhagim, mipnei machloikas. He would say no, because very nice, Mr. Yehuda, you still have grapes on your grapevines over here, but where I come from in the Galil, they're already gone. I brought these grapes from the Galil, therefore I have to get rid of them. But never mind, mipnei machloikas. The Mishnah had said that you have to keep chumrei makam shaholach lasham and chumrei makam shiyotze misham, even when there's no machloikas. So why is Rabbi Yehuda, on the face of it, allowing him to say that, you know what, you're right, I don't have to get rid of my grapes because mipnei machloikas. So what? He still should have chumrei makam shiyotze misham. He should still have to follow the chumras of the Galil and get rid of it Purim time. What it is Rabbi Yehuda is actually saying, Rabbi Yehuda is actually referring to something else that the Tanakhama had said, namely, Vahachikama. So like this, the Mishnah is saying, what happens the other way around? What happens? A person goes from Yehuda, where the grapes are on the vines longer, and he goes to the Galil, where they're there for a shorter amount of time. So he takes grapes from a, sorry, the makam shaloi kolu. He's going from a place where they haven't finished off to a place where they haven't finished off. So let's say he's going from the Galil to Yehuda. He's going though before Purim. So the grapes that he has, if he had still back been home in the Galil, he'd still be allowed to eat those because you still find those on the trees. And as long as they're available on the trees, as long as they're available for the chayas in the fields, then you're allowed to eat them. Then you're allowed to eat them and whatever. So now v'shamash kolo b'mekaymai. Now he hears that they're already gone in his place where he came from. Let's say, in other words, so after he traveled to Yehuda, now he hears a few days later that they're gone from his place. So now at this point, beer kicks in. So the Tanakama had said chayev levayer, that he has to do beer because where he comes from, they're gone. And Rabbi, it wasn't, but that's the thing. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda would say no. In that case, he doesn't have to. He can wait until the time for beer in the place where he is now in Yehuda, because he could say to the others, save a havelacha afata mehecha de isnu. After all, you could go. This person who's from the Galil and is coming to Yehuda. He could say. Or even he could say to the people where he came from, I'm not doing any different than your minhag. I brought it to a place that makom shaloi kolu. If you go over there, if you come to Yehuda also, you'll also find plenty. So therefore, I'm not required to do beer on the ones that I brought over here either. So Rabbi Yehuda would say, in this particular case, he's not required to follow chumrei makom sheyatzim misham, because he can say, look, you know, even makom sheyatzim misham, when I left, they weren't yet chayiv in beer. Where I am now, they're also not chayiv in beer. So why should I be chayiv in beer now just because back home they're already chayiv? The problem with that, So Rabbi Yehuda would say, "V'havel chafata mehecha de isnu, from where they are. In other words, from where I brought them. V'holei kololahu. And over here they haven't finished. And even where I came from, they hadn't finished yet when I left. So therefore, I'm not obligated to follow that." So the question is, "L'memer de Rabbi Yehuda l'kula kama." So do you mean that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to tell us a kula over the Tanakama, where the Tanakama would be saying, in that case, you are required to do beer on these fruits, and Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that not? Rabbi Lazar says he had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim that Rabbi Yehuda is talking l'chumra, that we have to understand somehow Rabbi Yehuda is saying a chumra over the Tanakama rather than a kula. So we can't understand the Mishnah that way. Ela epoch. So rather, we have to say it means the other way around. The Tanakama would say eini chayev levayer. The Tanakama would say that in that case, this that we're adding to the Mishnah, we're saying again, he's going from a place shaloi kolu to a place shaloi kolu. He's going from Galil to Yehuda before Purim. Say, and there are still grapes on the vines in those places. So even though he hears afterwards that they are actually all gone in the Galil, nevertheless, he doesn't have to do birur, because again, there's no chumrei makom sheyatzim misham, because they weren't also yet when he left. That would be the Tanakama. Then Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, then Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that no, there's still a zilzal in the minhag of where he came from, because after all, the people where he came from would be able to tell him, go try to bring more grapes from where you got these original ones, and you can't, for by now they're gone, so therefore you're required to follow our minhag, even though you're not here in the Galil now, and you have to do beer of them, even though where you are now in Yehuda, you still have a few more weeks. So that would be the Chumrah. Yeah. Okay. So that's one way of understanding what Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah. In other words, that Rabbi Yehuda is addressing a point which is not explicitly in the Mishnah, that the Tanakama had talked about the case where a person goes from a place where kolu to a place where not kolu, or vice versa. And now we're saying Rabbi Yehuda is also addressing the case where it's not kolu in either place, but then later on, after he traveled, then he found out that kolu. First of all, to make Rabbi Yehuda go l'chomer, but second of all, to even understand what Rabbi Yehuda is saying without him contradicting the point of chomer makom sheyatzim misham, etc. Yeah. Abaya Omer, Abaya gives a different explanation. La'olam kidkatoni, we actually don't need to really add another case to the Mishnah. We are talking about where he's going from a place where Kolu to a place where not, or vice versa. He's going from Yehuda to Galil or Galil to Yehuda. The Mishnah means like this. Suppose he's going from a place where loy kolu to a place where kolu. So he's going from Yehuda to Galil. So being from Yehuda, these grapes are ones that he'd be allowed to have around until Pesach, because in Yehuda you have them until Pesach. Meanwhile, in the Galil, the beer time for grapes comes Purim. So he travels to Galil. Now he traveled back to Yehuda with those same grapes, or more realistically, wine, whatever. It's still between Purim and Pesach. So the time of beer in Yehuda has not come yet. So we don't require him to do beer, even though he had them for a little while in the Galil. And that should require him, maybe as long as he's in the Galil, to be Mavir them. But since then he turned around and went back to Yehuda, then we don't require him to do that. And he can keep them until Pesach. Well, no, it was the time because it's already after Purim over there. But okay. He should have maybe, but let's say he didn't. He returned them back to where they were, and it's still not kolu. It still hasn't come Pesach time yet for this wine. The Tanakhama would say he doesn't have to do beer. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that no, we have to be machmir. After all, if you were to try to go bring more grapes from where you brought these, back to Yehuda from the Galil, in the Galil they're already gone. So therefore you're required to do beer just by virtue of the fact that they were in the Galil. The problem with that is Tosfos says that's a better answer than Rav Shisha Breder of Idi's answer, because it doesn't require us to add another case to the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said, we're talking about he went from Mokum Shalakolu to Mokum Shalakolu, or vice versa. Now we have, it's exactly that. He's going from a place where for Loi Kolu to a place where Kolu. And then he came back. So you don't really have to add a whole nother case to the Mishnah like you did in Shishi Breder of Edie's answer. Fine, but that's a minor detail. But the problem with that is Maskef Leravashi, Little Yehuda, Otu Agaba de Chamra Kaltinu. What do we say? According to Rabbi Yehuda, the fact that you had it on a donkey's back means that now it's like it was grabbed by that place. In other words, the fact that you brought that wine to the Galil makes it wine from the Galil just because you brought it there on a donkey. The fact is, it doesn't come from the Galil. You didn't stay there. Why even according to the Yehuda should you be obligated in the beer time of the Galil just because you brought it there on a donkey? Yeah, let's say. Ela Omer Rav Ashi beplugta dehani tanoi. So rather, Rav Ashi says the machloikas of the Chachamim and the machloikas of the Chachamim and Rabbi Huda relates to the following machloikas tanoim. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shvius, hakovish shloisha kvoshin b'chavis achas. Suppose a person pickled three kinds of vegetables in one barrel. So let's say Tosfos says, let's say for example he took a turnip and an onion and a kafloit, which is a leek or a scallion or something like that. So let's say he has three different vegetables over there that are all soaking over there in vinegar or whatever to preserve them. Now each one absorbs flavor from the other one. We say in halacha kavush kamavushal, when you have things that are pickled together or soaked together, it's considered after a while like they're cooked together. So each one has some of the flavor of the other ones in it. So now what happens? Each one has beer at a different time. Now it's interesting, by the way. I thought it very interesting. You can find online nowadays, you have every time before Shemitah, the Bote Dinim in Eretz Yisrael published tables of when things are chayev b'kedushas shvius, where you know produce that was harvested from when until that's available in the stores from then until then is chayev b'kedushas shvius, and they also have for beer. All three of these things that Tosfos mentions, it says on these tables are not required. Beer is not required because I guess they stay in the ground over they stay in the ground over winter. Like turnips, for example, you always have. There's always turnip roots left in the ground, so there's always available to the chaya. So it's odd that Tosfos picked those particular examples where beer doesn't apply to them. I don't know. Okay. Anyway. The truth is, in those tables, there's a lot of things that, on the face of it, you would think are chayiv and beer, but they're not. Maybe because nowadays they grow them in greenhouses, so they're available all year round. I don't know. Yeah. For example, tomatoes over there, they have, let's say, are not chayiv in beer. I guess because they grow a lot of, they grow them in greenhouses, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Practically speaking, animals do dig for food, but kol lechayim in asada means when there's no more of that produce available left for the chayas in the field. And here there is, because the roots are still in the ground and the chayas can easily get to them. Yeah, we learned already before, for example, that when you have, let's say, chametz fell, that you had a building collapsed on top of chametz, we said as long as it's not 3 tefachim deep, then you have to get it out because a dog could easily dig for it. Okay, you don't necessarily plant turnips that deeply either. Yeah. Anyway, so again, you've got these three vegetables all pickled together. So when do you have to do beer? Rabbi Eliezer, I'm oichlan ala rishon. Rabbi Eliezer says you're only allowed to eat as long as the first one is. Is not yet subject to beer. Meaning, in other words, in Tosfos's example, let's say of these three vegetables, let's say turnips are the first one to go. Let's say that turnips had beer applied to them. Let's say they were the first. Let's say, for example, you would say that the deadline for beer for turnips, let's say, is cheshvan, and for onions, let's say, would be kislev, and for scallions would be tavis. Then Rabbi Eliezer would say, once you reach Cheshvan, then you have to get rid of all of them because all of them have absorbed taste from the first one. Yeah. Tosfos has a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of all of this. One explanation Tosfos brings is also from Rabbeinu Nissim, and also Rabbeinu Hananel says it over here, that Rishon over here doesn't mean the earliest one that has its beer. It means the first one that you pickled over there. The first one is considered the most important, and therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, all the other ones go follow it. Whichever one you put in the barrel first. Anyway, that's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua ima afala achron. Rabbi Yeshua says you could even follow the last one, meaning in our scenario, you could eat all three of them until Tavis, because the last one, the deadline comes only in Tavis. So therefore you'd be allowed to eat all three of them. In other words, Tosfos explains, Rabbi Yeshua would say that the heter, the pasuk is giving us, is that even though the goof of this thing was already, the goof of this turnip was should have already had beer done to it in Cheshvan, but since it absorbed taste from something else, which is available until Tavis, then you're allowed to continue eating it until Tavis, is how Rabbi Yeshua would say. Yeah. Yeah, Lahakol, yeah. And Rabbi Gamliel takes a sort of middle view. Kol shekola minim in asada yivara minim in achavis. Whichever one is gone from the field is the one you have to get rid of from the barrel. So comes cheshven, you have to get rid of the turnips. Come kislev, you have to get rid of the onions, and so forth. Yeah, pick them out. Even though the taste is absorbed into the other ones, Rabbi Gamliel is not concerned about the taste. The halacha kedvarav, and the halacha is like what he's saying, and in fact that is, now you have a bit of discussion whether those words halacha kedvarav are actually a correct part of the Mishnah or not, but whatever the case, the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Gamliel. So therefore, applying that to our Mishnah, so again, Rav Ashi is saying that machloikus relates to the machloikus in our Mishnah, meaning in other words, so the Tanakhama would hold like Rabbi Yeshua. So he's saying, you're going from a place where, for example, the scallions are still available, and you're going to a place where they're already gone. Nevertheless, you're still allowed to eat all three things in the barrel, including, let's say the turnips. We said the turnips are the first ones to go, and Rabbi Yeshua would allow you to, because he's saying that you're allowed to eat until the time of beer comes for the last ones. For the third one in the barrel, Rabbi Yeshua is the one who's mekel. Rabbi Eliezer is machmer and says the first one. Rabbi Yeshua is mekel, says the last one. So the Tanakhama would be saying like that. Rabbi Yehuda would be saying save a havel ha'afata. After all, if you go out and try to find turnips, you're not going to find them because they're gone from the field. Therefore, I hold like Rabbi Gamliel that once turnips are gone, then you have to get rid of the turnips from the barrel. So that would be the machlokas. Actually, the Pnei Yeshua asks, if that's the case, then why on earth is the Gemara presenting the machlokas of the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda davka in connection with the case where a person is traveling from one place to another? L'chora, the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel applies even if you're sitting back home with this barrel with three minim in it. So he says that maybe what it is he. So he says that maybe the machloikas isn't that maybe. In other words, Rabbi Yeshua would say, if the person is back home with his barrel with the three things, then fine, I'm going to agree that you can go like Rabbi Yeshua. But when he's traveling to another place where one of these minim is already gone, then I'm going to be machmer like Rabbi Gamliel and say that save a havel chafata, and therefore they have to get rid of the one. So in other words, you would need both, according to Rabbi Yehuda. You'd have to have that one of them is already kola in the place where you're traveling to. So even then, the Tanakama and the Mishnah would say that it's fine. You can go like Rabbi Yeshua, and the last one is still available over here, and therefore all of them are good. And Rabbi Yehuda would say, the fact is, in this place already, the first one is gone. Therefore, you have to get rid of that one from the barrel. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's when you have to be machmer. That's how the Pnei Yeshua understands it. Yeah. Okay. Ravina says, I have a different explanation of the machloikas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in our Mishnah. Beplugta dehani tanoi. They're arguing within the machloikas of the following tanoim, the Tanan. Oichlin betmarim ad sheyichla ha'achlin shebetzoyar. You're allowed to eat dates throughout the whole Eretz Yehuda until the last dates are gone in the city of Tzoyar. Tzoyar is, we know from Parashas Lech Lecha and Vayera, it was the last city of the five cities of Sodom left over. So it's by the edge of Eretz Yehuda. It's by the south of the Dead Sea. So it's a very, very warm area. And therefore, produce lasts longer on the trees there than it does in other places. Because it's very, very hot and there, and therefore things stay on the trees longer. Actually, it's interesting. In the times of the Gemara, and for some time afterwards, there was actually a nice sized Jewish community in Soyar. They dug up very, very interesting. They dug up some ancient matzevas from that community and they learned from them interesting details about how these Jews lived. Anyway, about nowadays, part of Israel, yeah. So anyway, the point is like this. We're going to learn on Amud Beis, again, that there are different regions of Eretz Yisrael for purposes of Bir. You have Yehuda, Evra Yaudin, Galil. So within Yehuda itself, Tzoyar is part of Eretz Yehuda. And since in Tzoyar it's warmer, and therefore the fruit stays on the trees longer, you're allowed to eat dates anywhere in Eretz Yehuda until the last ones in Tzoyar are gone. You actually have an opinion of Reb Shimon over there in the Mishnah that says that dates and olives and a couple of and one or two other things, that you're allowed to eat them anywhere in Eretz Yisrael until the last one is gone in all of Eretz Yisrael. He holds you don't even have a difference of regions as far as that. So according to him, you could eat anywhere in Eretz Yisrael until the last ones in Soyar are gone. This is Reb Shimon, but here we're talking according to the Chachamim over there. They say you can't do that. You can't eat dates in the Galil on the basis of that there are dates still on the trees in Tzoyar, because Tzoyar is in Eretz Yehuda. It's too far away from the Galil, and we're going to learn on Amud Beis that according to them, that's no good. But in Yehuda itself, you're allowed to, even if you live in the mountains of Yehuda, where again it's colder and therefore the fruit falls off the trees faster. So where you're living, so let's say you're living in Yerushalayim or Hebron or wherever, where the dates are gone long before that, but you're still allowed to continue eating them because there are still dates on the trees in Soyar. The point is, in other words, we're going to learn on Amud Beis. The point is, it has to be still available for the Chayas. If the Chayas in Hevra, in Yerushalayim, can't find dates, they migrate, they'll move around within Eretz Yehuda, they'll move to Tzoyar, they'll like instinctively go to Tzoyar and find dates over there. So therefore, it's still considered that's available, L'chaya Basada. We don't say that between regions, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis. So we don't say that between Yehuda and Galil, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis. You don't say the Chayas are going to travel all the way to Galil. We're going to talk about that on Amud Beis. Anyway, so that's the Tanakhama. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, I agree with the basic concept that you're saying, Tanakhama, but when we say that you're allowed to continue eating dates as long as there are dates on the trees in Soyar, now you have two different places on the tree where the dates can be. You can have where they're in their normal place, growing among the branches, that's Bein HaKippin. So then, yes, you're still allowed to continue eating them elsewhere in Yehuda on that basis. But then you have the Shitzin. You look at a palm tree, the trunk of it has these jagged things sticking out of it. Sometimes you have where dates fall off the tree and get caught in those jagged things. No, they don't start growing again, but animals can't get them from there because it's jagged and it's sharp, and they're going to get injured if they try. So Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is saying that And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying, as long as there are still dates in Soyar growing on the branches or between the branches, then fine, you can eat them. But if you have ones that are knocked down and are over there between the protrusions over there, between the spiky things on the trunk, then no, that's not a valid reason to be eating them. Now, the Tanakhama doesn't make that distinction. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in our Mishnah would be having the same machlokas. The Tanakhama would be saying, as long as there's dates available anywhere on the tree in Soyar, then you're allowed to eat in the whole Eretz Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, Seva Havalacha Fata, go bring them from a place where it's roi. Here it's not roi. You can't get them either from over there because you're going to get hurt. So therefore, that's not considered a valid reason. So Rabbi Yehuda would be holding like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay. So now let's talk more about this detail of the various regions as far as beer. Thank you. Tnanhasam, we learn in a Mishnah in Shvius, Shalosh Arotzes Levir. There are three regions, three lands within Eretz Yisrael that have different dinim as far as beer. Yehuda, Ve'ever HaYarden, VeGalil. When we say Ever HaYarden over here, by the way, there's an interesting argument among Rishonim. What do we mean by that? Do we mean Ever HaYarden as in what we usually think of as Ever HaYarden, the area where Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe lived? Or do we mean Ever HaYarden, the western side of the Yarden, meaning more or less what's now called the West Bank, meaning the center of Eretz Yisrael, on the west side of the Yarden? So you'd have Yehuda would be the southern area, from Yerushalayim and southward. Galil would be the northern area, like from Beit Shan or whatever, and northward. And then you'd have the area in the middle would be called Ever HaYarden, according to that. You have an interesting thing like that also, for example, in Parshas Vayechi, when it tells about Yaakov's funeral, and it says that they came to Gordon Ha'otod. We had it yesterday in Yaakov. They came to Gordon Ha'otod Asher Be'ever HaYarden. So you also have an interesting discussion about that. What does it mean? Does it mean Ever HaYarden as in what we usually think of the east side? But then why are they going the long way around? Mitzrayim is in the south. They're going to Hebron. Why are they going on the long way around through Ever HaYarden, like the route that the Jewish people took from before Yitzias Mitzrayim, instead of going the straight way through up Derech Eretz Plishtim, they should go Derech Eretz Plishtim and then cut across to Hebron. Maybe then Ever HaYarden means maybe over there Ever HaYarden means the west side. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So you have these three places: Yehuda, Ever HaYarden, and Galil. The Sholosh Arotzes L'chol Achas V'Achas. Within each of those three regions, you have three regions. Meaning, in each one you have mountains, valleys, and plains. So within Yehuda itself, you have the mountainous areas like Yerushalayim and Hebron and whatever. You have the valleys between the mountains, and then you have the plains, like you have, for example, the area, let's say, of Tel Aviv, the area of Beis Shemesh, all those areas that are plains, the Shvela, it's called. Yeah. Okay, so within each of these three arotzes, you have three areas like that. So in what sense do we say that there are three lands as far as beer? If we're saying that each one has three arotzes in it, then it comes out there are nine altogether. So why are we calling it only three? Because we're allowed to eat within each one until the last one in that area, in that region is gone. Meaning, in other words, so let's say you live in Yerushalayim. So because you're in the mountains and it's colder, so therefore your trees and your vines and whatever lose their fruit faster than they do than they do, let's say, in Tel Aviv, where it's warmer. Nevertheless, you're still allowed to eat. You're still allowed to eat produce in Yerushalayim because in Tel Aviv, there's still produce of that kind available on the trees. So that's what we say. That's what we're saying. In other words, all of Eretz Yehuda is considered as one area as far as that, even though in terms of the actual geography, there's a huge difference between Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv as far as the climate and the geography and whatever. Tosfos actually disagrees with that. Tosfos learns that what it means is that within each place you have to go according to the topography, according to the climate of that area. So therefore, that no, in Yehuda itself, it means, in other words, so in Yehuda itself, for example, you would only be able to eat in the mountains of Yehuda, in Yerushalayim and Hebron and whatever, as long as you still have fruit on the mountains in Yehuda. And Yerushalayim. So for example, let's say Hebron. So let's say Hebron being further south than Yerushalayim, it's probably a little bit warmer. So therefore, you'd be allowed to eat in Yerushalayim while there's still fruit on the trees in Hebron. But you couldn't go according to what's in Beis Shemesh or Tel Aviv or whatever, because that's a completely different it's still in Eretz Yehuda, but it's a completely different type of climate, because one is the mountains and one is the lowlands.
But
yeah. Hebron
is also
Hebron is mountainous also. Okay. Anyway, Menahani Mili. So where do we get this from that we divide up Eretz Yisrael like that? Why don't we just say you go according to how it is in all of Eretz Yisrael? And as long as there's fruit on the trees someplace in Eretz Yisrael, then you're allowed to eat. So the answer is Omer Rav Chama Bar Ukva, Omer Rav Yosef Bar Chanina, Omer Kro, because the pasuk says V'livrehem Tochav L'Chaya Asher Be'Eretzecha. The pasuk says that the fruit of Shemitah, the produce of Shemitah, should be available for your domestic animals and for the wild animals that are in your land. So why mention both of them? Why do we have to mention the Chaya? It means Kol Zman Shechaya Echelas Min Asada, as long as the wild animals are still able to eat this kind of produce in the fields, then you're allowed to feed this kind of produce to your animals in the house and to yourself. Once it's gone from the fields for the chayas, then you have to get rid of it for your animals and for yourself from the house. So Ugmiri now, so what does this have to do with the distinction between Yehuda and Galil and so forth? Ugmiri, we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, the Ein Chaya Shebi Yehuda G'deila Al Peres Shebi Galil, the Ein Chaya Shebi Galil G'deila Al Peres Shebi Yehuda. They don't go back and forth. Chayas in Yehuda, they may wander all around Eretz Yehuda to look for food, to look for the type of fruit that they like, but they're not going to go all the way into the next region over in order to look. So therefore, that's why we say that we divide it up like that into regions. No deer allowed on the highway. Yeah. No, the point is, in other words, they don't travel that far. Although you have the problem. I mean, after all, where Eretz Yehuda ends is where Galil begins. Let's say. So then, in that case, if we say, let's say that Eivra Yarden means the area of Reuven and Gad and Chetzi Shevet Menasheh, then Yehuda would be the south of Eretz Yisrael. Galil would be everything north of that, like everything north of Yerushalayim. So what do you mean? It's not like an animal can't easily go, let's say, from Yerushalayim to Beis El or whatever. So therefore that brings us more to the explanation. Like Tosfos says, we're not talking so much about the Arotzis, we're talking about the geogram, we're talking about the climate, the climatic regions, where therefore the mountains in Eretz Yisrael are all more similar to among each other than the mountains are to the valleys. So in other words, again, our hypothetical animal might go from Yerushalayim, might go north all the way to Shechem, let's say, even though that's in a different region because they're all in the mountains, but it's not going to go down to Tel Aviv because that's a completely different climate than it's used to. Okay. Anyway, that's the idea. That's where we get this idea of dividing up Eretz Yisrael, because you have to figure out what's the range of the chayas. Do the chayas stay, and what's the range that the chayas stay within and won't go outside of, even if they can't find the regular kind of fruit or whatever that they're looking for. It's interesting also, I thought, again, in these tables that I was talking about that they publish every year before Shemitah, every 7 years before Shemitah, and you can find them online, they don't seem to give different dates of beer for different areas in Eretz Yisrael. They just say as a blanket statement, this particular type of produce, the time of beer for it is in January or Purim time or Pesach or whatever it is, not dividing among the different regions in Eretz Yisrael. Could be because there's no way to know where the fruit came from. That's possible, I guess, maybe. Although, I don't know. I mean, I would imagine, for example, bananas, there's only one place, there's only one area in Eretz Yisrael they grow them near the Kinneret. Maybe they give you the date from it. Could be. I don't know. Because warmer there, yeah, by the Kinneret, it's warm enough to grow bananas. But actually come to think of it, they do grow them by the Dead Sea also. So maybe, I don't know. Okay. Okay. So I don't know, but yeah, maybe it has to do with the fact that nowadays it's not always easy to tell what part of Eretz Yisrael a particular fruit or vegetable came from. Yeah, could be. All right. Yeah. So when we talk about beer, by the way, so let's talk a second what we mean by beer. Now we're going to start talking about the dinim of beer. So let's talk about what the actual definition of beer is. The Rambam holds that beer actually literally means taking the thing out of your house and destroying it. It means partially. You're not allowed to eat it after that time. On the other hand, Tosfos over here says that no, all it means is you have to take it out and make it hefker. After that, if you want to reacquire it from hefker, then you could do that. What Rashi says over here is a little bit questionable, because Rashi uses the expression. He says that you have to put your mafkiron b'mokum drisas chayo behema. You have to be mafkir them in a place where chayas and behemas can step on them. Now Tosfos understands Rashi to mean similar to the Rambam's shita. That means you actually have to destroy them, which leads Tosfos to ask, "What do you mean? Why should you have to destroy them? You should only need to be mafkir them." On the other hand, the Ramban understands Rashi to be saying more like Tosfos, that all you have to do is you have to be mafkir. What does it mean to be mafkir? It means you can't just put it in your backyard. You have to actually put it someplace where Chayas and Behemoth conceivably could step on it, but not that you actually have to leave it for them to step on. Well, if they want to eat it, they could eat it. But the point is, even whatever's left that they're not going to eat, they're going to be dirtus and going to be wounding. Yeah. The Ravid actually has an interesting shitta. He says there are two stages in beer. He says there's a stage where there's none of that fruit left in your immediate vicinity. Like in our example, let's say you're living in your shalayim and there's no more grapes available on the grapevines around your shalayim. At that point, you would have to do like Tosfos is saying and be mafkir any grapes or wine that you have left. And then afterwards, you could take it back from hefker. Then you have a later point where they're gone completely from that area, from all the mountainous areas of Yehuda, or from all of Yehuda in general, even Soyar. And then at that point, you'd have to do beer, like what the Rambam is saying, and actually destroy it. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is, especially nowadays, that there's many poskim who say that Shemitah nowadays is only Dirabbanan. So there's, as far as I know, they're makel, and they hold, according to the opinion, that beer only requires you to be mafkuret, and then that's it. Okay. So, Tanan Abanan, Peres Shiyotsu Me'Eretz Yisrael L'Chutz La'aretz, fruit that was taken out of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, fruit of Shemitah. Now, it's not so simple to do that in the first place. In fact, you're usually not allowed to take out Shemitah fruit from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, which actually becomes a big discussion, what they do every Shemitah, what they do as far as a Asuragim. So Minach Chabad is we use a Asuragim from Italy, and therefore we use Yanever Asuragim, so there's no issue. But those who use a Asuragim from Eretz Yisrael, every 7 years, you have a question, you have an issue, what they do. They have Oitzer based in whatever, anyway, I'm not going to get into it. Last Shemitah was Tavshin Ayin Hay, next one is Pei Beis. Anyway, so you're really not supposed to take out fruit from Eretz Yisrael anyway, except under certain conditions. We'll talk about further on what Tosfos says about it. No, we're talking about fruit that has Kedushas Shvius. You're not allowed to take, right. Right. But nevertheless, let's say you did. Misbarin b'chol mokam shehem. When the time comes of beer, you have to do the beer no matter where they are. So let's say you took with you wine from Eretz Yisrael. The deadline for grapes, we're going to say on Nun Gimel Amad Aleph, is Pesach. Comes Pesach of the year after Shemitah, then you have to do beer on the wine that you have with you. Because the Kedusha of the seventh year. What do you mean? Why is it called that? Right. Well, so to be exact, we talked about yesterday about svichim. There's a difference in that regard between fruits. There's a difference in that regard between trees and other kinds of plants. Trees are going to produce fruit every year, and vines and whatever are going to produce fruit every year, whether you take care of them or not. So you're going to have, you don't have to plant anything. You don't have to plant anything because the branches, by it's a tree, the trunk and the branches are already there from before. As opposed to vegetables and grain and whatever, they only grow if seeds are planted in the ground, and you have a zera derabanan that you're not allowed to eat svichim because people may plant them and then claim I didn't plant them, seeds fell on their own, whatever, anyway. But here we're talking about grapes and wine, so there's no issue of svichim, but there is the issue of kedushas shvius. Any grapes that grow on the vine during Shemitah have kedushas shvius. So now again, comes the time of beer. Pesach of the year after Shemitah, there are no more grapes left on the vines anywhere. Therefore, you have to do beer. So even though you have this barrel of wine with you in Chutz La'aretz, you still have to do beer of it right there. Reb Shimon Elazar says, no, you can't do it in Chutz La'aretz. Yachzru l'mekayim and v'yisbaru. You have to actually take it back into Eretz Yisrael and do beer over there. Mishum shenem about tzecha, because the pasuk says, in your land. So the question is, ha'apikdei, we just said before the word ba'artzecha teaches you that you have to go according to the area within Eretz Yisrael that you live, that there were the three or nine areas in Eretz Yisrael, and you go according to each one individually. So how can he be using it for another drasha that you have to take this back to Eretz Yisrael? The answer is kribe ba'oretz ba'artzecha. Because for the first drasha, it didn't have to say ba'artzecha, it could have just said ba'oretz. V'lo v'hemdecha v'la chayasha ba'oretz. But instead it said ba'artzecha, so therefore he says you can learn two drashas from it. Inami me asher ba'artzecha. Or you can learn it from the word asher, because it could have said v'lo v'hemdecha v'la chaya ba'artzecha. So either way, so he has another word to be darshining over there, that you have to do beer, that you have to take it back to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara gives an example. Rab Safra nafak me Eretz Yisrael l'chutz laretz. Rab Safra had left Eretz Yisrael and gone to chutz laretz. Hava bade garba de chamer de shvius, and he had with him a barrel of wine of shvius. Now, we just said that you're not supposed to take fruit of Eretz Yisrael out of Shemitah out to Chutz Laretz. Now, in the case that we were talking about before, okay, you could have it with an Amah Oretz. He didn't know better. So now the question is, what does he do? But Rav Safra is a Talmid Chacham. He knows this din. How is he doing that? Tosfos actually says, when we say you're not allowed to, means you're not allowed to take it for eating, but you are allowed to take it in order to sell it. Now, you're usually not allowed to sell Shemitah fruit either, but you're allowed to sell it in small quantities. So here, Reb Safra had taken it out because he was planning to sell it. Although actually the Chazan Ish analyzes this Tosfos and says it's actually supposed to be the other way around. There's a mistake in the text of Tosfos. He says it should be the other way around. You're allowed to take it out to eat, but not for Schoira. So Reb Safra was taking out the barrel because he needed wine to drink on the way, like you said, for Kiddush and whatever. Whatever he was doing was mutter. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is maybe he took it out b'shogeg. He didn't realize he had it with him, and then on the way he discovers he has it with him, and now what do I do? Anyway, so Lavu Bade Rav Huna Breder of Iker of Rav Kahana. Rav Huna Breder of Iker and Rav Kahana were accompanying him on the way. Omalahu, so he asks them, Iker de Shmiele Minei de Rababohu Halacha Kerab Shimon Alazar Eloi. Have any of you, you're both Tamidim of Rababohu, have either of you heard whether the halacha is like Rav Shimon Alazar or not? Do I have to take this barrel back to Eretz Yisrael in order to do beer, or can I just do beer right over here? So Rav Kahana tells him, you should know, Rav Abohu said the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, therefore you're going to have to turn around and go back to Eretz Yisrael and do beer over there. On the other hand, on the other hand, Rav Huna Breder of Ikka said that no, Rav Abohu said the halacha is not like Rav Shimon Elazar. So what do we do now? Who do we follow? Amar Rav Safra, nekoit ha-klola de Rav Huna b'yodach. You can take the rule that Rav Huna said in your hand. In other words, we can assume that Rav Huna's version of what Rav Abohu said is correct, which comes out of Kula. The Dayik, because he's precise, the Gomer Shmaitsam of Pumadirabe, he learns statements of halacha from his Rebbe very precisely, kirachva de Pumadissa, just like Rachva for Pumadissa did. What did Rachva do? The Amar Rachva, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Harabai, Stav Kofal Hoya, Stav Lefnim Mistav. Rachva says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda that the Harabayas had a double stav around it. We learned in the first parak it had rows of benches around it, and the benches were covered with roofs so that you could sit on them even in bad weather. We learned in the first parak they would put the two loaves of the Toida on the top of those roofs over there as a signal to everybody when you're allowed to eat chametz and when you have to stop eating and when you have to start burning chametz. So you had these itztava. So Rachva quotes in the name of Rabbi Yehuda that there was a stav lefnim mistav. So how does that show that Rachva was very precise? Rashi over here says that Rachva wasn't sure whether he heard it from Rav Yehuda, which is Rav Yehuda by Yecheskel, the Talmud of Rav and Shmuel, or whether he heard it from Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, who lived at the same time. Therefore, he said in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, in order to make it clear, whichever one, I can't remember who I heard it from, but whichever one, I'm being precise with that, and I'm saying Rabbi Yehuda in order to cover all my bases. That's what Rashi says over here, although actually there's a different place where Rashi mentions that explanation and doesn't like it. So there's a few other explanations. Another explanation is that even though he heard it from Rav Yehuda, he still said Rabbi Yehuda out of respect because Rabbi Yehuda was his main Rebbe. So therefore, in that sense, we say he's so precise with his Lashon that even though everybody else is calling him Rav Yehuda, he's being particular to call him Rabbi Yehuda. And another, that's Tosfos mentions that earlier in the Masechta. And another explanation Rashi mentions elsewhere is that what it is the usual word for this kind of structure in the Mishnah is itztava, like we had in the first parak, munach algava itztava, that they would put the two loaves of the Torah on the roof of the itztava. Instead, because Rabbi Yehuda had taught it to him with the Lashon Stav, therefore he used the Lashon Stav, even though it's not the usual word for it in the Mishnah, because chayiv adam lamim b'lashon rabbi. So that's another example where we see that he was very precise in what he gave over. So therefore, so now Rav Safra is saying Rav Huna is of that caliber also. Just like Rachva, he's very particular in being in making sure that he knows exactly what he's saying. That, in other words, that, for example, that when Rabbi Bohu said something, he would ask him again to repeat it in order that he has it clear. Therefore, you can rely on what Rav Huna is saying, and that means Rav Safra is saying, in my case, that means I don't have to take this barrel back to Eretz Yisrael. I can do beer right over here. You have Rav Ikka's in a few places in Chas. Maybe Rav Huna, but Rav Ikka, I don't know. Korya, Rabbi Yosef. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef didn't like that, and he criticized Rabbi Safra. What are you doing? So in effect, you're saying you want to be relying. You're relying on the one who's being more makel because you're saying he's more exact. Like the pasuk says, "Ami be'etzer yishol." The Navi criticizes the Jewish people. My people ask their sticks for advice, like when they were worshiping Avodah Zarah and doing nichush or whatever. Ve'umaklo yagidloi. So they ask their wood, umaklo yagidloy, and their stick tells them, like they use their stick to do nichush. But he darshins like umaklo meloshin mekel, call him mekel loy magidloy. Whoever is mekel, he's listening to him. So like you, Rav Safra, you're dafka choosing according to the one who's mekel. What are you doing? Okay. Another case. Thank you. Okay. Rabbi Loi Kotz Kafniyosa de Shvias. Here's another thing involving Shemitah. I mentioned yesterday, by the way, there's no Gemara Bavli on Masech de Shvias. So this is one of the ones, whenever the Bavli comes across something involving Shemitah, it always takes the time to have a nice long sugya on it so we understand dinim, which otherwise there wouldn't be any place else in Shas that we're going to have them. So here's another one. Rabbi Loi Kotz Kafniyosa de Shvias. Rabbi Loi, one time doing Shemitah, cut down a tree that had kafnias on it. Kafnias are little, unripe dates. There's little unripe dates. So he cut down the tree. Now, usually you're not allowed to cut down a fruit-bearing tree anyway, baltashkes, but there are cases in halacha where you're allowed to. So in this case, so that he was allowed to from the point of view of baltashkes, but the question is, what about the dinim of Shemitah? So the question is, hechi ovid hachi. How could he do that? The Torah tells us that peiros shvias are meant to be eaten. They're not allowed to destroy them. You're not allowed to ruin them. In this case, when he cuts down the tree, they're going to stop growing, so that's ruining them. So you're going to answer maybe that applies only once it's already considered fruit, and you would argue maybe as long as it's not considered fruit in halacha, then there's no problem. Maybe these unripe dates are not yet considered fruit in halacha because they're very unripe. Can't be. Hani maschli de orla. These maschli, which are when dates are first growing, you have this kind of wrapper. You have this kind of shell that grows around them, and then afterwards, as they mature, it falls off. So that shell is called maschli. So that kind of thing of orla asiri. Those are also hoyo vanasa shomer lepri because they're a shomer because they protect the fruit when it's still young. So if the tree is orla, then the maschli are also and therefore the dates are orla. So are the maschli. And v'shomer lepri emas hava. At what point in the fruit's growth do you have maschli? When is it protecting the peiros? B'kufri only when it's very young. Only when it's very young, immature dates. The kafniyasa that we said before. So in that case, for kakori lahu. Peri. And Rabbi Nachman is still calling it Peris and saying it's also as Orla. So by the same logic, it should be considered Peris as far as the dinim of Shemitah. So therefore, how can Rabbi Loi be cutting down the tree when you have Peris on it? And well, the question isn't whether you still have the protector. The point is we see that even at that very early stage when they have the protector, Rabbi Nachman is already calling it fruit. So therefore, when it's kafniyasa, it's also considered peiri already. So therefore, so how is Rabbi Loi cutting down a tree and causing the fruit to be damaged where now it's not going to grow anymore? So the answer is Rabbi Nachman to Amakir Rabbi Yosi, because Rabbi Nachman could be saying only like Rabbi Yosi. The Tanan Rabbi Yosi I'm a smadar awesome of Neshu Peiri. Rabbi Yosi says, when it comes to Orla, that smodar is also, smodar is when you have the fruit grows from a flower. So you have there's a point where you have the flower growing and then eventually the flower falls away. And then you can see the individual little grapes. They're tiny at that point, but you can still see them. That's called smodar. And Rabbi Yossi says already at that point, it's also as Orla. So we see, in other words, that he holds that even very unripe fruit is considered orla. But the Chachamim argue with him. They say it's not yet considered orla until it reaches a later stage, which we're going to talk about, soon. So therefore, so the Chachamim argue. So good, Rav Nachman is saying that they're considered a peiri already, even when they're very unripe. But the Chachamim disagree. The halacha is like the Chachamim. So fine, Rav Nachman is entitled to hold like Rav Yosi. Rav Eloi can hold like the Chachamim. However, then, so we'll continue tomorrow, where the Gemara is going to point out that on the other hand, it seems that Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim argue only when it comes to grapes. When it comes to grapes, it seems they agree when it comes to other kinds of peiros that there is, that even when they're unripe, they're already considered peiros. So how is Rabbi Loy allowed to cut down the street? So we'll continue with that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Shkayach, everyone.